Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan. But not Lynette this week. Mark Holland filling in for Lynette. But we do have our normal doctors here, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, for another rousing edition of Leading Edge Medicine as they stand and get ready to talk to you. Phone number to call is 206-644-6006. That's 206-644-6006. Very busy weekend in Seattle. Lots of activities going on. Giant concert. I think there's Taylor Swift at Lumen, both tonight and tomorrow night, and also baseball games right next to each other.
I know.
So that's going to be quite a disaster.
I'm not going down there.
So sit back and call in your questions instead.
All right. Well, I stay away from the Seattle whenever I can. So, sorry. I'm just not that fond of, you know, psychotics wandering around talking to people that aren't there and, you know, drug addicts laying in the street with the needles hanging out of their arms. I mean, it's just,
they cleaned that all up for the All-Star game a couple of weeks ago.
Boarded up buildings. You know, I mean, when you walk down the, go down the street and there's store after store after store with plywood across the windows.
Yeah.
I mean, it's turning into a third world dump.
Mm. Well, we have to prevent that from happening.
I just stay away from it and protect the east side.
Yeah, well, we have to do that, too. Anyway, Jerry, you've been traveling some. Where have you been? Tell us about your book.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I've traveled a lot. Of course, I talked a little bit about last week about my big trip, which I just did a 20-day jaunt through Europe, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But then I got back and I was here for 2 days.
Yeah.
And then I got back on a plane and flew to Albany, New York last Sunday night. And I've spent the week in Albany doing a 90-minute public TV special for public TV. It's a part of their fundraising. Start playing in, I think, early December, right after Thanksgiving break. And so, I've been finishing up my book and spent some long days for the last 5 or 6 days prepping the TV show, and that should be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a good show. And, you know, I thought I was done with the book. I got it all off to the editors. I said, okay, that's it. Maybe a few minor tweaks. But then while I was gone, I kept thinking of new things. I got a couple of new chapters now that I want to add to the book. So the book that was finished, I think I've got at least another one and maybe two chapters I'm going to do. It occurred to me that what I really ought to add to the book is a chapter that says, if you were to come to Longevity Medical Clinic, here's how we would approach you. Here's what we would do during your first year with us. And basically go through in with some detail of the more common hormonal interventions and lifestyle interventions and stuff that we would do. And then I also want to put in a chapter in the more cutting edge, in addition to our basic program that we do for virtually everybody. Mm-hmm. Here are the more advanced things that we are currently doing. And here are two or three of the super advanced things that we are not yet, but are on the horizon that we think will probably be added within the next year or two.
I mean, you know, when you first started the clinics, there was just a basic hormonal thing, which now everybody's offering. But you started it way before it became commonplace. And at that time, people frowned upon it, and they were not so receptive, except for those who knew the science.
We considered, it was considered woo-woo medicine. But no, everybody isn't offering. That's the problem.
Well, what I meant was that there are a lot more people, especially functional medicine physicians, that are doing bits and pieces of it.
Yes. But that's the problem, is they get a piece of it.
Yeah.
And the patients don't know the difference.
They don't, yeah.
And so, you know, the patient is getting, maybe the guy is getting testosterone, and he thinks that's hormone therapy for him.
Right.
Or the woman gets estrogen and a progestogen, and she thinks that's her hormone therapy. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's piecemeal, and it's inadequate. Mm-hmm. Because there are at least 8 and perhaps 9 or 10 hormones that the vast majority of the population needs to be evaluated for several times a year. Once they're over 50 and their levels are dropping, the number of people testing pregnant alone, for instance, is low.
Yes.
Okay. Lots of doctors are writing testosterone for men, but very few of them are writing pregnant alone. Almost none of them are writing progesterone.
Yeah.
Very few are getting the dehydroepiandrosterone. Almost nobody is considering, will this person benefit, you know, from a mood-changing hormone, you know. So I think there's a lot of that is, people are picking up on a little piece here and there, they're offering it, and the patients think they're getting what we offer, and they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the scary part, because they're getting inadequate care when they think they're getting what they need.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is one body, and everything that we do to one part of it is connecting to the other part and impacts on something else. And that's why when I first started dibbling and dabbling in this and became fascinated by it, I went for the board certification, and I knew that was the only way to do this right. And to this day, I go back for certifications and recertifications, and I go back to the conferences to learn what is new in this realm. Mm-hmm. So unless you can offer somebody a holistic look, like, you know, like in medicine, we divide things up, right? You have your primary care provider that used to be the gatekeeper, and then you have neurology, cardiology, orthopedic surgery, GI, and so on and so forth. But nobody wants to take responsibility, and everybody wants to shuffle you back to the primary care provider. Well, now primary care providers are tired of that. And so internal medicine became the box that everybody said, okay, well, go to your internist. He'll kind of figure it out. And so they dibble and dabble. So similarly, in functional medicine, what I'm finding is people will say, oh, I'm an expert in GI health. I'm a functional medicine expert in hormones. But they don't understand what thyroid does to the hormonal milieu, how it impacts on cardiovascular health, and what estrogen does to the heart. And so you have to put it all together. And for that, you really do require a 1 hour to think about what your patient is going through.
Well, and you need the knowledge base.
Yeah.
You know, I've struggled a bit with this concept of people wanting to say, well, I'll take your test and I'll go to my primary care doctor and I'll let my doctor, or I'll let my naturopath.
Yes.
And if you have heart disease, would you go to your psychiatrist to get your heart fixed? No. You know, would you go to your pediatrician? No. Would you go to your dermatologist? No. All right. Well, you're aging. And there is a longevity specialist. And the longevity specialist has a body of knowledge and a toolkit very different from your primary care doctor. He does primary care diseases.
Right.
Okay. He may do a hormone or two. He may write a prescription for some thyroid or some estrogen or some testosterone, but he is not an aging doctor.
Right. You know, that's not to be confused with gerontology. I have respect for gerontologists. But recently here, I have heard many controversial things where they are really quite opposed to our outlook and our way of practicing medicine for our older patients.
Sure.
And their whole thing is, let's prescribe this drug, but the dose has to be so-and-so to avoid side effects. And our whole thing is, well, let's not use the drug if we don't need to, because you don't have a Prozac deficiency for depression.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, the gerontologist, the gerontologist's strong point is juggling the dozen or so medicines that most older patients who are getting near the nursing home are on.
Yes.
And the gerontologist's job and their area of expertise is really, how do I minimize the side effects and the complications and the drug interactions that all these old folks are on this dozen or two drugs?
Right.
That's radically different than our approach, which is, how do we make them stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, and sexier?
Yep.
The hell with a dozen drugs and shuffling off to the nursing home. That's not where I want my people going.
That's right.
So, you know. But yeah, I did address that in the show.
Oh, you did? Okay.
For public TV, we did a little segment on frequently asked questions, and one of the questions was, you know, can my primary care doctor do this? And I'd say, well, I don't know. Do you have your primary care doctor, you know, do your heart surgeries? the fact is that we are a specialty clinic, and our specialty is the common, undesired changes of aging.
Right.
And how do we make you as good as you can possibly be? We aren't just interested in letting you develop diseases and then treating those diseases. Yeah. I don't want our guys to get prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. If you do have a prostate cancer, I want the urologist to give you the most cutting-edge care he can. I'm not going to treat your prostate cancer.
Right.
But I am going to have you on tadalafil.
Yeah.
And progesterone, mm-hmm. and try to keep you from ever getting prostate cancer. I'm going to try to increase your muscle mass so that your immune response mm-hmm. is robust and all of your cancers are going to be suppressed.
Yeah. You know, at a recent AMMG, Morgenthaler, Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler was a keynote speaker. And in his studies, he stopped short of saying this, and he said it, but he said, you know, when he's looking at recurrence of prostate cancer in patients on testosterone therapy, his findings are, except for those few minority of patients where testosterone was the culprit, the vast majority, it seems like testosterone may actually be suppressing recurrence.
Yes.
And he said the research is pointing in that direction.
I think there are several studies that are showing that men on testosterone therapy that have had a prostate cancer have fewer reoccurrences. I'm convinced the studies are not big enough and long enough lasting as yet for me to make that a 100% dogmatic statement.
Sure.
But I think that's where the data is right now.
Yeah, I mean, he brought up some very, very interesting topics, and it was so much fun to be there. I mean, he got a standing ovation. The hall was full the day he came in and to do the keynote speech. He got a standing ovation. He presented the data. He talked about his studies. He talked about the outcomes. He talked about androgen deprivation therapies and what kind of an impact they have on people's lives. He talked about the threshold for testosterone that we've been talking about all day, and how we have to change the mindset. We really do need to advocate for proper hormone replacement for men as they are aging so that they can reduce their risk for cardiovascular disease, dementia, osteopenia, fractures, loss of muscle mass. These are such important topics.
Yes, they are.
Okay, find out more about Longevity Medical Clinic. Book your appointment, lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com, or call 866-86-YOUNG. We need you to call the studio right now with your questions for Dr. Mixon or Dr. UMAT today. That number in studio is 206-644-6006. That's 206-644-6006. Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine with the doctors here in just a few moments. And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Dr. Mixon, Dr. UMAT in studio and ready to take your call at 206-644-6006. That's 206-644-6006. And during the break, we had a call from Michael in Bothell, and he wants to know, how do you know when you really do have high blood pressure? Michael, you're on with the doctors.
Okay. Yeah. Hello, Michael.
How do you really know symptomatically? Oh, that's an interesting one. Sometimes you don't ever know symptomatically.
Most people don't know.
Yeah, unless you measure. No, some people will say, oh, I get a headache and I know it. But really, most people don't.
Well, that's my point. Most people don't know that they have high blood pressure. And in fact, and the symptoms are probably not recognized as high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Oh, you got a headache. Okay, so you got a headache. Does that mean you didn't get enough sleep? Does that mean you're just unlucky? Does that mean it's, you know, your spouse is driving you crazy this week?
All of the above. I had one of my team members. It was Joanne. And maybe I won't say it. Okay, we'll move on. Keep going,
right,
Dr.
Move
Mason.
Move on. Crack that whip. So
my question is actually not symptomatically. It's based on readings, actual readings.
Okay.
And my readings were as high 2 years ago as 168 and over 88. But I've come down because I've lost a bunch of weight.
Good.
Also, my readings tend to be taken just before a blood draw, and I have a needle phobia.
Right, sure. Yes, and that'll raise a lot of people's pressure. Yes, I agree.
I'm a member of Longevity, and Dr. UMAT's actually my doctor.
She's my doctor, too.
And so all my readings from Longevity tend to be on the high side, like 150 over 72.
Hang on a minute. Are you saying I stress you out?
I keep telling those ladies that do the blood draw, they're not supposed to draw the blood while sitting on your lap. That raises the pressure.
They're not listening to you, and we have younger and younger ones out there now.
Okay.
We have guys, too, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, one of the guys sits on my lap, that'll really raise my blood pressure.
I think this conversation needs to change.
So my pressure in March was as low as 113 over 64, which I understand is quite normal, but it was recently 150 over 72. So I have these broad ranges.
Yes,
I just don't know when it's time to actually get medication for blood pressure.
Okay, that's an excellent question. And actually, I have a similar situation. Okay. My blood pressure is very dynamic. Mm-hmm. And there are times I'm running 122 over 70. Mm. And other times I run 145 or 148 over 85. And, you know, what's going on to make the difference?
I think the longer you stay away from bending, the higher your blood pressure goes.
Perhaps, yeah, because I get...
Have you seen that correlation?
I haven't checked my... I just got home last night, though, and, you know, she said, why did you try to wake me up in the morning? I said, sweetheart, I didn't try to wake you up. I've been gone for a week. I woke up in the night, and you were there, and I couldn't resist snuggling. I miss her. I happen to be desperately in love with a woman. How can I help that? Anyway, and I hate sleeping alone. You know, just knowing she's there soothes
me. Well, you know, it was your choice to do the TV show.
I know. And, you know, and we have a 11-year-old and she can't come with me. And that's the problem. So what I decided to do... Okay, mm-hmm. I went and I did a literature search.
Okay.
And I said, let me back up a little bit. In general, the lower your pressure can be, without getting dizzy when you stand up is best. Mm-hmm. The higher your pressure, the more damage it does. The more it damages your brain, the more it damages your arteries throughout your body. So the more kidney problems, eye problems, brain problems, heart problems, peripheral vascular problems, neurologic problems you're going to get. So I want to have the lowest blood pressure I can maintain without getting postural hypotension.
Right.
When I stand up, I don't want the blood to drain out of my head and make me dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And for much of my life, that was a problem. My blood pressure stayed low enough that if I stood too fast, I would get woozy for a moment.
Mm.
I'm now in, you know, my mid and going to late 70s next month, 76 years old next month, and my pressure is rising enough that now sometimes I'm seeing pressures of 146, 148 over 85, and I don't like that.
Mm.
So I went and said, okay, my goal, lowest pressure I can have without postural hypotension. Next question in my mind is, what drugs will moderate that blood pressure, those peaks, and still have the most benefit on my longevity?
Right. And before we get there, Jerry, you know, as we get older, we are prone to higher readings.
Yes.
Because the vascular tree is not as flexible as it used to be.
And your nitric oxide levels
are dropping. Yes.
And nitric oxide is a chemical that is produced in the endothelium, the lining of the arteries, that causes those arteries to expand and open up, which drops your blood pressure and improves your blood flow.
Right. So for some people, seeing higher readings as they get older can be a natural phenomenon, but it doesn't mean it doesn't require treatment. And what he's describing...
It's normal, but it's not necessarily good.
Right. And then the vasomotor symptoms and the variability that he's describing is also a concern.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, what are you going to do about it? Well, I went in and said, I'm going to medicate this. One of the things that I'd like to do is to boost my nitric oxide a bit. So I try to use my Neo 40 twice a day at least, and sometimes three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And that increased nitric oxide level does indeed dilate my vessels a bit and lower my pressure.
Right. So we used to do it in the past and we got away from it, but now we're doing it again. We are doing a simple saliva test to measure your nitric oxide levels in the clinic. It takes the girls literally less than 5 minutes to do it. And you can request it at every blood draw and then you can initiate therapy. And then once you get to goal, you want to stay at goal with the treatment. And the treatments in the office, of course, are the Neo40s that you use, Jerry, and the Vasconex, which is the new product that we've added.
Right. The other thing is the tadalafil, the long-acting PDE5 inhibitors. Those I love because they lower the risk of cardiovascular events and death significantly. They slow the growth of any cancers you might have. And so just because of my age and I have a prostate, I want to make sure, you know, and I got a family history of colon cancers and so on. So I want to stay on the tadalafil, and that again, helps lower my pressures. And then the next step is a blood pressure medicine and usually an ACE inhibitor or an ACE receptor blocker. Those two classes of drugs, they tend to do the best job of both lowering pressure without causing low blood pressure, without causing hypotension. And there are studies showing that both the ACE inhibitors and the ACE receptor blockers do extend lifespan. These are the new longevity drugs. So enalapril is the one that I have picked that seems to have the fewest adverse effects that is good for moderating blood pressure and extending lifespan. The other supplement I'm looking at is taurine that is probably going to be the next anti-aging supplement out there.
But does taurine somehow increase blood pressure?
Taurine is
kind of stuff in Red Bull?
It is in Red Bull.
Yeah, it is.
The problem with taurine in Red Bull is it's coupled with a massive amount of caffeine and sugar, which are the two things I don't want you to have.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, they've taken something that is good, and they've put a couple of things that are not so good with it.
But taurine helps with muscle mass also, right?
It does.
Yeah.
And it improves the mitochondrial function in your muscle so that you keep your energy level higher.
Right.
Yeah. But, see, the benefit there is people with good strength tend to be more physically active, and people with more physical activity have lower blood pressure.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, a fascinating question. Maybe we can close out and see if there's any more.
Okay, Michael, do you have any more on that subject that you want answered?
No, I'm going to try the Neo 40, and I'm already on tadalafil, so I'll just have to talk to Dr. U. Mattis to when we decide to go on an actual drug or not.
Sounds good.
Okay, all thank right. you, Michael, right, for your
thank
call.
You, Michael. Bye-bye.
We have Melissa,
call.
Dale, and Ray all standing by to get their questions answered, and you can call in your question, too, 206-644-6006. Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine from Longevity Medical Clinic in just a moment. Makes him stand up in the studio. Going to start doing a Tom Cruise dance here.
Is it a Tom Cruise dance?
Well, yeah, that movie that where he danced to this song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he does that in Mission Impossible, though.
Yeah.
Leading Edge Medicine is what you're listening to. It's brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, ready to take your questions at 206-644-6006. We have several people standing by on the phone, and Melissa in Bothell, you're up next with your questions for the doctors.
Hello, Melissa.
Hi there. I had a question. We have idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis on my dad's side of the family. Mm-hmm. And so probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I went in just to have my spine, there was x-rayed for a chiropractor or something, and then I showed it to my osteopathic doctor, and then he was like, oh my gosh, there's a, he said there was like a black dot on my lung. And so then I went and I had the gold standard test, for IPF, and spoke with the doctor, and he said, your lungs are just, they're long, there's no, you don't have anything on your lung. And then I just said, well, what do I need to do like with this, my family? And he just said, usually comes around when you're in your 70s. But I just didn't know if there's something, I need to do to be proactive about that, or if you have any suggestions about that.
Well, okay.
That's an interesting one.
It's an interesting one. It's a difficult one.
I think, basic things. I'll start with the basic, Jerry, and I'll let you go into the harder ones.
I'm looking at it because I'm sitting here thinking of the last research papers I saw on this.
No, I haven't seen any research papers recently.
I have.
Way out of my wheelhouse. But a couple of things, about, we've been talking about vascular disease. And so when we talk about prevention, if at all you have ever smoked or are a current smoker, I would say that's a big no-no.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm a hiker. I have a dog care business. I walk dogs. I'm very, very active person, and I eat healthy, and I don't do any kind
good
of drugs
you.
Or drinking or smoking. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis is the first word tells you our biggest concern. That word idiopathic means we don't know why. Okay.
Yeah.
No known cause. Anytime you see idiopathic, it means the doctors don't know what the hell we're doing. So, and so we're trying to treat something that we don't really know the causes of. And so we kind of draw these profiles. It tends to happen more in men. It tends to happen in this age group. It tends to happen with these people of this sorts of background. But we don't really have a good cause. The most fascinating study I've seen recently on it was actually one with Mayo Clinic, in which they did the senescent cell therapy.
Oh, really?
Yes. They had a group of older men, average age was close to 80, actually, who had idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and they were end stage. These were all people with advanced disease and really had trouble getting around. So they did the dasatinib and quercetin. And this was actually the study that I caged our protocol from.
Okay, well, it was on pulmonary fibrosis. Interesting.
That's right, yeah. And, okay. And so they did 100 milligrams of dasatinib for 3 days,
right,
along with 1,000 milligrams of quercetin for the same 3 days, each week for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
A total of 9 days of therapy. And then they went back and redid their pulmonary function testing, and they did redid their x-rays and the CTs and stuff to say, okay, did we make a difference?
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, it was a mixed result.
Okay.
The people with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis with advanced disease and real serious embarrassment of their physical capacity all increased their ability to walk and climb stairs. They got improved physical capacity from just three-day courses of therapy, which I thought was pretty fascinating. But they did not get any x-ray or pulmonary function test improvement.
Okay.
So that's why it's a mixed result. On the one hand, we did not see PFTs and x-rays improve, but the people clinically were more functional. Yeah, and so did the anti-senescent cell therapy improve their cardiac output and their muscle strength and so on? And is that why they did better?
Right.
Or did we get some lung improvement that just was subtle enough that clinically they did better, but we couldn't measure it on our standard testing?
Right.
But for whatever reason, 9 days of therapy and they did better. I thought that was kind of neat.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what about rapamycin?
Well, again, I have not seen rapamycin on this particular disease. But rapamycin has improved essentially every aspect of everybody and every animal it's ever been tested on. You know, everything from heart remodels and gets better. Lung function tends to improve, prostates improve, cancer risk goes down, inflammation decreases. The only downside of the rapamycin is blood sugar and cholesterol both go up.
Indeed they do.
Oh, wow.
And so we see higher blood sugar and higher cholesterol, and yet, despite that, they live longer and better. Because everything else gets better.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yes. I mean, it really is. So, you know, we're back to Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt.
Yeah.
You know, there is no free lunch in this world. And everything we do is a balancing act.
Yeah.
So if you know you don't like have it, but it's in your history, then do you just do a gold standard test once in a while or every so many years? Or
okay, let me ask you a peripherally related question. Are you one of our patients?
No.
Okay. Step one, I become one of our patients. The reason that is a peripherally related problem is if you're getting in an age group where you're worried about this and you have a family history of this, it would strike me that the important thing to do, which is what I'm doing, is to be as healthy as you possibly can, to have the best immune system, the best muscle mass, you know, the lowest risks of cancer and the lowest risk of autoimmune diseases that you possibly can.
Right.
And that's what we do for a living. So, you know, if you wander through the world and just let what's going to happen happen, then yes, the best you can do is repeat your pulmonary function tests periodically. Make sure you get your periodic chest x-rays. And when the if and or when the disease starts to develop, you know, then mm-hmm. maybe you'll decide to come see us. you know, but yeah. In the real world, you know, our whole goal is to treat the aging process and make you as strong, right, fast, right. lean, smart, yeah. sexy, cancer-free, you know, dementia-free mm-hmm. as we possibly can.
Right. Yeah.
And so everything I can do in that area is what I would do.
Right. No, I completely okay. agree with you, Jerry. Yeah. Okay. You know, I have a gentleman in my practice. He's not been with us quite a year yet, and he came after his first stroke, and about in his 60s now. Mm-hmm. And somebody sent a current patient of ours sent him to us, and he came with a nice note, and he said, "You know, you really need to help him. He's just barely 60." And we started his care, and a couple of weeks ago, he was readmitted to the hospital with a complication of the drug he was put on for the stroke. So he had a bleed. And he came out of the hospital, and then I've been in touch with him regularly, and unfortunately developed a GI complication, again, from another drug that he was put on because of the original stroke.
Yeah.
But each of these two visits, he was able to get out of the hospital reasonably quickly. And, you know, as bad as I feel for him, and I really do, and sometimes I take it like it was my responsibility, and I have to say, come on, you didn't do this, you know.
You didn't write those drugs.
No. But his outcome has been better every time, and he's been able to come out, and now we will manage his care. Yeah. So my point is that I've had this happen in the past as well, and those patients are still my patients. We can't always prevent what is happening because of certain issues, but we can right. strengthen your body so that your outcome is better and that you can withstand these insults when they happen to you.
In this case, there's nothing I can do about your genome.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah.
but your genetics mm-hmm. are propensity, not destiny.
That's
and,
right, yeah.
You know,
I've
and
read
so,
about that.
Yeah, and so the genetics give you the risk, but how you live and the other things that are happening to you are what control whether or not those risks become reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're all about. You know, so I want to shift
right.
your epigenetics as far as I can towards robust, yeah. good health and away from disease.
Yeah.
But I can't make you do it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take care, my
okay,
dear.
Okay, thanks,
bye-bye.
Melissa. That opens up room for you to get on the line with the doctors at 206-644-6006. Back with Dale in Briar and Ray in Woodinville in just a moment as Leading Edge Medicine continues after this break.
Man, I feel like a woman.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Today, your doctor's taking your call today at 206-644-6006. And we have, looks like Dale from Briar on the line with a question about prostate cancer treatments. Good morning, Dale.
Dale, I'm going to digress for just a moment, though. That song,
yeah,
that the song in which she's singing about, man, I feel like a woman. I actually hesitated before I put that one in the rotation because, well, it's a woman who says she feels like a woman, and I'm afraid the progressives might get really upset about that. So, what they would want us to have is a big, deep male voice that says, man, I feel like a woman.
Yeah, that song has taken on some new meaning lately.
Oh, well.
I don't know that song, so okay. Moving on.
It's a fun song. She talks about the great okay. things about being a woman, that you know, you get out and have a little fun, men's shirts and short skirts.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, how can we help you today, sir, now that we've digressed in my thoroughly politically incorrect yeah. ruminations?
Thanks, Dr. Mixon. This is Dale from Briar. I'm a patient in the Northgate or Linwood Clinic. Dr. Cho, last time I called, I asked for a raise for Dr. Cho, and she said, thank you for the raise.
And you know what? When you called, Dr. Umat said, yeah, me too.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Sorry about that.
So, no, you're not really sorry.
To remind you of my story, 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Then 2 years ago, it reoccurred, so it's metastatic. And so I'm taking hormone therapies, which result in hot sweats,
hot flashes, urine menopausal symptoms, yes.
Exactly. So my daughter was doing some research, reading, and so she came across acupuncture, cryotherapy, and mindful relaxation practices. Have you heard anything about those?
All of them. Yeah. Yes. I've heard more about them than I understand. Okay. Acupuncture. Let me tackle that one first. Acupuncture works, and I have no idea how. When I was a medical student, we actually had a doctor go to China and film a major abdominal surgery done on a patient whose only anesthesia was acupuncture.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, they're doing the acupuncture and they're opening his belly.
But Jerry, wouldn't you say that, like so many other things, acupuncture maybe works on some but not on everybody for unknown reasons?
Well, and there are different schools of acupuncture that use different techniques.
Indeed.
And so I look at the so-called, you know, the lines of chi and so on, and they don't fit any physiologic structure that I can find anywhere in the literature. Something is happening with acupuncture, but it totally evades my understanding because I've looked and I can't find anything that makes any sense to me. I have the same issue with chiropractic.
Yep.
You know, different chiropractors use radically different techniques. Mm-hmm. And yet, when I look at the literature, people with back pain who see a chiropractor get back to work nearly twice as fast as those who come to see us MDs. Mm. Something is happening, and I don't understand what. And the explanations I get from the chiropractors don't make a lot of sense to me either because they do radically different things to get the same results. The cryotherapy I can kind of understand some.
Right.
Cold adaptation is a very potent physiologic response, and it changes an enormous number of things.
Sure.
With cryotherapy, we shift our metabolism suddenly towards the production of brown fat as opposed to the white fats and the yellow fats. And the brown fat is a metabolically active, high energy consumption tissue that actually makes us skinnier. It's a kind of fat that makes you lean, which sounds almost self-contradictory, but it's true. And the primary trigger for that is drops in body temperature. So people who ski in shorts and t-shirts, for instance, instead of bundling up like I do, covering every square inch.
Yeah, or, you know, taking the ice baths that we've seen.
The ice baths and the polar plunges and, yeah.
And then also recently taking, churning the shower really cold at the end of the shower.
And you've got the age-old Scandinavian thing of they're in the sauna and then they run out in the winter and jump into a snowdrift.
Right.
No, but that we have measured some very potent physiologic changes with this sudden vasoconstriction and cold temperature effect on our bodies. So, you know, I can say, okay, there's a whole lot going on there that people have measured and, you know, and I can understand the physiology. But some of these other things... Yeah, it's probably true that something is happening, but I don't understand how and why.
Okay. Well, Dr. Cho is going to be mad because she said, I want you to ask Dr. Mixon about these two things. I wrote them down. They're at my home, but I'm at the beach house now, so I forgot, so I'll have to call, back. But we really love Dr. Cho, so please keep her on staff.
You know, I've been trying to keep Dr. Cho on staff for a decade. She used to work for me full-time. And then she tried to retire for a little while, and she got unhappy retired, and I got unhappy being without her, and I convinced her to come back 2 days a week, and then she went down to 1 day a week, and and one of these days she's going to quit again, and then I'm going to do everything I can to drag her back. I love Dr. Cho. I don't want her to quit. Dr. Cho, if you're listening to this, please never quit. So...
I agree.
Okay. But, you know, she's...
Right, thank you.
Okay, you take care.
She opened the Linwood Clinic.
She did. Yeah. She was the doctor that opened the Linwood Clinic for me. And, you know, she's been with me a long, long time. And she's... The one downside is her accent is a little bit odd, and the dictation programs don't know what to make of it. Mm. Because she is Korean, but was raised in Uganda. Mm. From her parents who were Christian missionaries in Africa. Mm. And then she has been here. So her English is a Korean Ugandan English accent.
Interesting.
And so when the verbal translation dictation programs that I bought for her, she can't use them because they never know what to make of her accent.
Well, she's a strong advocate for the program, and she lives it and breathes it herself,
She's a great doctor and an incredibly sweet human being.
Yeah, she is.
She started the Linwood Clinic.
Yes, she did.
She was my first doctor in Linwood, and I'd like her to keep supervising that Linwood Clinic for at least another 10 years.
Well, you can book an appointment at the Linwood Clinic, the Tacoma Clinic, or the Kirkland Clinic. Get those two free health tests at lmclinic.com. Sign up for those there. And also at 866-86-YOUNG. Sign up to get those two free tests. And we're going to be taking a quick break here back at after the top of the hour break with Ray in Woodinville and John in Tacoma. And we can take your questions as well, 206-644-6006. This is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics, back in just a few moments.